This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ.
Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is this a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early.
Oh, my God, it is early. But not too early to talk to the head chef. So on a Friday morning, the first Friday of 2019, do you laugh when you think of the year 2019? It's like, yeah, that really wasn't on my radar growing up.
No, not wasn't. I remember going up on a ski lift under the Eiger Mountain. It was a little T-bar, and I guess I was 30 years old, and I thought, God, I wonder if I'll ever see 50. And we were always talking about 1999.
Yeah.
You think we'll ever make it to 2000?
Yeah, what's that going to be like?
Yeah. I wonder what kind of airplanes,
Twenty years ago, man.
Yeah.
When in your lifetime, it's kind of a weird discussion, but not in your lifetime. What's been the part of your life do you think that's changed the most over your life?
What's been the most significant would be the fact that I stayed into cooking. I really got locked in to being a chef and took it really seriously, more than when I was in high school, washing dishes and flipping burgers. And being a waiter for a high-end catering service, I think that kind of piqued my interest. And my grandmother always was talking to me about food and showing me stuff. But I just thought I'd do something else. I don't know.
Relative to life and how you live it? What part of life has changed the most? Is it in your life? Is it the way we communicate, the way we now watch on a daily basis world events wherever they are?
Instantly watch it.
Instantly watch it.
That would probably
medicine.
Be.
Medicine. The way you can travel now, all over the world.
I remember my first passport. I got was in 1968, and I had it for 2 years before I used it when I went to Europe in 70, and it was only good for 4 years. And you know, rotary phones. I remember that first couple of years when you go into the Latin countries like Italy or Spain or North Africa, there were two footholds or footprints raised up in a hole, and you squatted, right. and toilets have come a long way, baby.
So
phones, for God's sakes, and the technology, I couldn't even comprehend that stuff in 1970. There were just skis. There were no snowboards.
You know, I was in school, and the kids whose fathers would work on computers, because most moms stayed at home. Even then, I mean, women were increasingly in the workforce, but if you took a poll of my grammar school class, the majority of those moms stayed at home still in the 60s yes. and in the early 70s. Yeah, and so, but the kids who whose parents worked in the computer business, and there wasn't that many of them, they would bring paper, that green and white computer paper, that would have computer printouts on one side, and we would use it for art and things like that on the other side. And so the nuns would ask, right? They would find out these things, and they'd say, well, if you guys have extra paper that, you know, you're going to throw away, would you bring some of it to the school so we could use it for art and different things we do? And they would be like, sure. But that was, computers were big, they were big objects that sat in, you know, in warehouses, right, big rooms.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty amazing when you think of, and then, you know, that your phone, the average phone has more computing power than the Apollo spacecraft that went up with all those switches and panels and shit.
You said that to me last week, and I was blown away. That little thing that you put in your pocket has so much power.
When you think of the way in which our lives have changed, and then the way you got the news was, you know, predominantly through the newspaper, you know, and, you know, you read the headlines on the front page, and then there was local news, and then there were, at some point, you got to the editorials and the letters to the editor. And then the sports section, yada yada, the food section, and the newspaper was, I mean, they were huge organizations in your community. I mean, who they endorsed for governor and mayor, those were big things. And so life has changed so much, but I'm trying to think now. I mean, look at medicine, you know. It's amazing how medicine has changed through the course of our lifetime. Things that would have killed people years ago. Now, I mean, cancer. When you hear the word cancer, it no longer instantaneously means death sentence.
No, it doesn't.
Where years ago, when somebody had cancer, it did. So what? So do you think it is? Computers and technology? Is it the media? Medicine? What has changed your own life, Kim? What has changed your life the most?
In my life, it's been medicine. Because normally, the heart things in my family, I'd have been dead 20 years ago. So, That's what's changed the most for me. It's called stents and medication and a pacemaker, slash defibrillator that has shocked me back to life more than a few times. And, so the fact that I'm sitting here talking to you, 2 months away from my 75th birthday.
That would qualify.
My mind.
That would qualify. You've been shocked back to life numerous occasions. That would say, so what's changed your life the most? Well, the thing that's kept me alive, probably, and that is at is it a pacemaker, a defibrillator? What do you call that thing? Other than your best friend.
It's a defibrillator. It's a combination pacemaker to control the rhythm of your heart, and then it's a high-tech pacemaker because it has a third wire that attaches to the back of your heart. I call it the dark side of the moon. And when your heart stops, it jump starts it. You get a jolt, And I remember the first time, I remember when the first time it went off, Beth was in Bismarck, driving home from Bismarck. It was a Sunday morning. I'm sitting here reading the paper. And the next thing you know, I woke up on the floor with newspapers all around me. And I said, what the fuck happened? And I said, oh, yeah, my device works. Wow. So I went in and I had Chad drive me to the hospital, and they hooked me up, said, yep, your defibrillator went off. And then shortly after that, I got a couple of stents put in. And then it's happened several times. In Bismarck, I was in the hospital for 5 days because it kept going off. And I think it went off 5 times in the hospital. I think the nurses were more freaked out than I was. You know, I'm laying there, and all of a sudden I jerk, and they're just, bells are going, and they're running around, freaking out. But yeah, I feel very fortunate. And I would say the most important thing for me has been that pacemaker defibrillator and having the stents to keep my juices flowing. And then in late summer this year, I had a angioplasty, which means that they go in through your arm. And they ream out a stent that was getting clogged. And,
so you're like a bionic, man.
Well, yeah, except I don't have fake knees or.
You're like Lee Majors.
Yet. I'm avoiding those surgeries.
Well, let me tell you though, I mean, the people that have them swear by them and kick themselves for not doing it sooner. You know, I held out for as long as I could, and now I just want to boot myself in the ass because, you know, it feels so, I'm pain free. And, you know, in those surgeries, what's amazing is, I mean, for instance, when they installed your defibrillator, how soon were you out of the hospital?
Well, the first time I was in for 2 days because they had to go in through my groin, and they had to check it out. But that was for stents, the first stents. But when the defibrillator was in, I was out the next day.
And then they
cut a little slit above your heart on the left side, and they place this device that is about, 2 inches by 3 inches in your chest, maybe a half an inch thick or less, and they cut a little pocket and slide it in and sew it up, hook the wires up that are attached to your heart.
What?
And away you go. You're good to go, Buckle.
Good luck. We'll talk to you later. That stuff's amazing. My uncle just had it done, and he was out. And I couldn't remember how long it takes, but that stuff is and like with knee replacements and stuff like that. It's like, if I'm not mistaken, you're up walking around the same day. And it's just, and you're like, you were doing what? Oh, yeah. If you're up to it, they'll have you walking down the hallway and moving. Like, are you kidding me?
Here's the difference with knee surgeries now as opposed to when it happened to me. And I had knee surgery on my left knee, and 72, and it was in Columbia Presbyterian Hospital in New York City, and they cut a slit about a foot long. The surgery was 4 hours, and the guy that did the work was a Vietnam doctor, so he knew about sewing people up and fixing things. But it still works today.
But again, the difference was you were in a cast for, like, what?
Camp for 6 weeks.
Yeah. And then, I mean, when you had legitimate knee surgery, I mean, my recollection is you were in a series of casts for 6 to 7 months afterwards, and it was 9 months recovery time. And now they do knee replacements, and you're walking the same day. It's like mind-blowing. I mean, and it just popped into my head. My last trip to Bethesda, Walter Reed Bethesda, one of the guys who's been one of the great sponsors of All Marine Radio is Bob Nielsen and Turner Construction. So I met Bob, and we were going to have lunch with some people at Bethesda. Walter Reed Bethesda Complex is the same now. We go down into an area where amputees do physical therapy. And so Bob's been going there for years, so he took me down there. And I met two guys who have arm transplants.
Uh-huh.
And they're amputees, and they agreed to try this surgery, and they're doing physical therapy with a new set of arms. And you're sitting
there. That is tremendous.
Isn't it?
Think about it. Holy mackerel.
Yeah, mind-blowing.
It is.
Absolutely mind-blowing. And the one that I'll never forget was an article probably, I don't know, maybe a year ago, maybe 6 months ago. I don't know. I would say within the last year, but I'm not sure, of an article in the New York Times about a genital transplant. And,
oh, really?
Yeah. And for somebody who had their genitals blown off by an IED in Afghanistan. And if you've ever been a part of anything, a medevac, when you're doing that, and the fallout from it, the emotional fallout from what happened, people don't want to live, right?
No. Can't imagine.
Yeah, screaming at other Marines, somebody tell me the truth. You know, Doc, I can't feel my junk. And then reading this story about, you know, being excited just to be able to stand up as a guy, just be able to stand up and go to the bathroom. And you read that, and it touches your heart. In a way that, you know, and so medicine is just so unbelievable now. And your story is not atypical, Tim. There's so many stories about, you know, just, you know, things that probably would have killed people years and years and years ago, and they're still alive today because of the MRI, because of the CAT scan and the way we find problems and begin to deal with them. So pretty amazing, pretty amazing.
It is amazing, and you see it happening all around you all the time, and you just think, God bless medicine.
I guess the cell phone would have to be the one piece of technology that has changed everybody's life. I remember being in Iraq in 2000, so over 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Reading an article that said the cell phone is going to make your laptop computer obsolete. And I thought, how in the world is that going to happen? Like, what kind of crazy, like, your laptop is, you know, I mean, it's indispensable to your life, you know. And for somebody like me who I was doing a radio show, I was managing a part of a business, I've been elected to the city council. My whole life was in my laptop. And, you know, it went everywhere with me, from my calendars to different documents that applied to different things. You know, it was all in there, and I was like, how can a cell phone, this little thing in my hand? And now I rarely use my a laptop. It's absolutely amazing. So I guess that would be the piece of technology that has changed everybody's life. What do you think the biggest, when you think about medicine and technology and the changes over our lifetime, is there anything that you would say, I really wish this wasn't around? I wish it could be like it used to be.
Jeez, as far as medicine goes?
Maybe not medicine. Maybe advances in medicine are all pretty good. How about any other thing in life that modern life in 2019 has brought that you would say, you know, I could really do without? The one that leads to my mind is social media.
I was thinking about this earlier in our conversation. The thing that really upsets me the most and that I miss the most is a real fucking sports page.
Really?
I mean, I gotta watch TV to get sports. I can't read the sports page in this local newspaper. And I went in yesterday, I wanted to get the scores from the bowl games. And I said, could I get a USA Today? Oh no, it doesn't come to Grand Forks anymore. I mean, everything's through the tube, through television. And, you know, I liked it when reporters, when you got the New York Times, you got the Washington Post, the LA Times, you know, you've got bigger newspapers in cities that have good writers and do stuff, but, you know, we used to have a good newspaper here when I came to town in 85, and it was an informative paper. There was funny writers, and I miss that. But
they're going away. I mean, your newspaper just announced in the last few months that it was going to stop publishing a print edition.
On Monday, we don't get a Monday newspaper anymore.
Monday was the lightest newspaper because the writers were off, and the Sunday newspaper was big. Monday not so much. Wire stories and a few other things, but not too many people working on Sunday. But yeah, the print edition of newspapers has gone. I mean, and that was a staple. You got up, you got the newspaper, and while you were eating breakfast, you sat there and you read the sport page. And I would look at the box scores of all the baseball games to find out who was the guy who had, and I would pick one guy who had the best day. He was 3-for-4 with a home run and 4 RBIs. Okay. That guy's 3-for-3, but he has no RBIs. That guy's 4-for-4. He's got 2 RBIs. This guy, Joe Torre with the St. Louis Cardinals, he's the guy of the day. And I sit there with my little 12-year-old brain, like reading the newspaper, and then you come through the door if you hadn't seen the paper, right? You're looking for the paper. Where's the sports page? Oh, it's out here.
Here's how it went to my house. The paper came. Dad got the sports page first. I got the comics first. And then we switched.
Yeah. I mean, the newspaper, your life, you know, as Kim said, I mean, yeah, that was where you got your information from. And now, to me, the worst thing is I wish a modification to the way we live today. I wish we could shut off most of the comment section where all the vitriol takes place. I wish, and so I don't want to hear what every idiot, and I don't read that stuff. I'll read the articles, but I never go read the comment section because it's just too stupid. And so I wish there was a way that we could dial that back, but I don't think there is.
And it's everywhere, whether it's on your phone news, that seems to be the replacement of, reading the, you know, you can get the New York Times app, but you can get Washington Post, you know, all that stuff. You can read online.
Yeah.
And you can read the Herald online, but it's still not the same, you know, because their staffs are so pared down now in this regional papers that, they, like you said, that they do the, you know, AP stuff or whatever it is, they reprint, and it's usually a day later.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. And you get all your news now, you know, straight to your phone. But there was a ritual that went with all that, right? You got up, you're having breakfast. I can, you know, my mom sitting at the table with her cup of coffee, us getting ready for school and her getting us out the door and her having the paper there and sitting there reading the paper as we left for school in the morning. And that's how I remember us going off to school. If she wasn't driving us to school if it wasn't her week to carpool, she had her robe on and her slippers and she had a cigarette and a cup of coffee. And she sat at the kitchen table, and it was a ritual. It was just very calm, with your cup of coffee, way that you started your day.
I love it. And I miss that kind of stuff.
Yeah, my mom, with a piece of Kleenex, up the sleeve of her robe, in case she had to demolish somebody's nose on the way out the door. I understand, Mom, you have to wipe my nose.
But Beth, you just got a big laugh out of Beth, little bobblehead out of B.
I don't understand why you got to try to remove it from my face, though.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and it's just the way the world goes, and it's, I guess they call it progress. And every generation, you know, is sentimental about the past in certain ways.
Right.
And you have to embrace the new, and you have to adapt to it. But some things, I don't like to do it. But you have to grow with the times.
Right. No doubt.
What's showbiz?
One of the modern things that I enjoy the most, though, is I enjoy, you know, how you have access to so much at your fingertips via your phone and can watch so many different things. And in particular, seeing all the different things around the world. And I don't mean events, I mean all the beautiful places that you can see filmed in high definition, like when National Geographic goes someplace with their high definition cameras. I remember the first time I saw something that was filmed in high definition on a high definition TV, and I went, whoa. And seeing beautiful parts of the world like that is, to me, never, ever gets old. You know, and now they can put cameras on drones, and they're high definition cameras, and they can go to places that you couldn't have gone or got an airplane to, and see them in a way that you could never have seen it, and so it's just you get to see the world like you've never seen it. You get to see nature like you've never seen it, and it's so vivid. It's to me, that's one of the incredible parts, the way we get to see the world now.
Absolutely, Matt. And it is beautiful.
Hey, let me ask you this. Food has changed a lot in our lifetime. And so if you're just joining us, we're talking about, I don't know how we got onto it, but I think the subject of holy smokes 2019, never thought that would come around. And the changes that have occurred in both my lifetime and Kim's lifetime. I've been on the earth 61 years, living the 61st year. Kim, you're how old?
74, be 75 in March.
All right, so Kim completing his 74th year on the planet. What's the biggest change in food? Your business for so long.
In food is the way food has developed, where they do they recompose a strawberry, and they use nitrogen, and they freeze it, and then bring it back, and it's a stronger strawberry flavor. The way the ovens are today, the technology in the ovens, there used to be just wood-burning stoves, then electricity, and then they got the gas stoves, commercial stoves, and then the techniques in cooking. The stuff I did at Sanders is still applicable today, but the different fusion cookings and things like that that involves chemistry, Beth just said what? And I'm watching this show called Bon Appetit, like bong, like in smoke a bowl.
Yeah.
And it's a cooking show about cooking with cannabis. And the stuff is over my head. I don't know the different strains are different. They crystallize it. They're different flavors. And then in fancy restaurants, not cannabis restaurants, but just the technology involved in preparation of food. There used to be a blender. Now you've seen those things that you can stick in a big pot of tomato sauce, say, immersion blenders they're called, and it's a stick with a blender on the end, and it's about, some of them are 3 feet long, from 1 foot to 3 foot, and you turn that on, and you mix everything up. You don't have to pour it into a RoboCoop or some kind of blender, Vitamix or something. It's just the technology and preparation of foods has changed tremendously in the last 20 years. The kids, when I came back from Europe in 75, cooking schools were just getting started, like Culinary Institute of America, other chef schools, and there were no little restaurants like Sanders anywhere in the middle of the country. If you wanted a nice fancy dinner, you had to go to a big town, or in this part of the world, they were called supper clubs. And you had them in Sacramento and that area, where beef is king, and you have a family style. I've had my first wedge salad when I was about 12 years old at a country club in Hagerstown, Maryland, and I brought it back at Sanders, the wedge with blue cheese and little bacon bits, and and Slipknot, but it's an art form now, even more so than when I started cooking seriously. So food's changed tremendously, and you know, you just pass the torch to the next generation, step back, say go after it, and just save me a taste.
What's been the biggest, and so in all the changes that you've seen relative to cooking, is the biggest one technology, or is the bigger trend the penchant to eat healthier? If you had to hang your hat on one, where would you hang your hat in terms of the larger change?
I would say the larger change is the technology. Everybody is eating healthier. I started out the new year doing at least one smoothie a day with, you know, like, for example, I did a smoothie the other day with, we have a new Vitamix that's just killer. It just pulverizes. You don't have to juice anything. It turns it into liquid form, and I mixed about a half an inch square of fresh ginger with carrot, celery, spinach, apple, and grapes, and some coconut water. And it's killer, you know? And filled me up. You know, but health food is conscious to everyone. There should be to, you know, back off on the Big Macs. It doesn't say you can't have a Big Mac.
I hate that. We love the Big Mac.
Of course we do. Precious Big Boy. We've had a whole show on that. But and I'll never give it up. But, you know, I'm not going to eat three or four a week. I might
unless
eat three or four a year.
Unless Beth's out of town.
Yeah. I'd rather cook a hamburger myself, and I think I can create the secret sauce just as well as McDonald's can.
Well, you could sure as hell buy it, so you don't need to create it.
Yeah, but I'd rather make it. That's the thing with me. I got my mayonnaise, got a certain mayonnaise, ketchup, usually it's Heinz. I get a nice pickle relish. I finely dice some onions, minced onions. Not much, just a little bit. Just, you know, just certain things that you tweak that works for you.
All right.
I think healthy eating is come a long way for the world and this country in particular. But I think that the technology in preparing food, the different types of ovens they use in this country, you know, wood-fired ovens, like when I worked in Italy and that I had in Grand Forks, I brought the first wood-fired oven to Grand Forks, and that changes the dynamic of what kind of food you can cook in there. Roast chickens, you can do everything. Bake bread. It's remarkable.
Right.
And I think that goes a long way.
Right.
Now, a wood-fired oven is about 2,000 years old, if not older. So that's not new, but how it's applied and what is cooked in it is developing. And I find that fascinating. I find it exciting, and I love to eat it. Not that it's any less in calories. It's just the portions are smaller and more expensive. That's about how that works.
No, it's just when you think about the time that you've been on the planet, I can vividly remember sitting next to my grandmother when they landed on the moon. And we were at William Land Park in Sacramento, California, having a family picnic. And we were playing softball. And my grandmother was born, I want to say, in 1897. And so this would have been, 67, 68, whenever we landed on the moon. And it was daylight, and the moon was out. And we were gathered around my uncle's radio that he used to listen to the Giants on, my Uncle Jim. And we had stopped, of all things, we stopped at softball game, which I didn't really understand, but it was a huge deal landing on the moon. Kennedy had announced that we were going and now we were going to land somebody on the moon, for God's sakes. And I remember I wound up, as I came from the baseball diamond over to the shade, William Land Park was given to the city of Sacramento, the property by a large landowner, farmer, by the name of William Land, hence the name William Land Park. And it was on the, like most parks, when the city was young, it was on the outskirts of town. Well, the city has grown around it over the course of the years. And so, there's these big oak trees in the park, and they're huge, right? So we're under the shade. We're sitting at a picnic table under the shade, in the shade of one of the oak trees. And we've come out of the sun, and it's hot in Sacramento in the summer. And as I came under the, as I walked under the tree, and there was a series of picnic tables that we were having this picnic at, my grandmother was sitting at one of the tables with her legs facing away from the table and kind of leaning back a little bit on the table. And my grandma at the time was a big woman. And so she had an apron on, and she said, "Michael, come here, sit next to me." So I said, "Okay, Grandma." So I walked over and I sat next to her, and we were listening on the radio. My uncle's radio on top of his cooler. He had this green and white igloo cooler, right?
Yeah.
It was metal that he used to, and he took it everywhere. So the radio's sitting there. And I remember my grandmother looking at me saying, "Michael, I cannot believe that Americans are going to be on the moon today." She said, "You know, when I came to Sacramento, when I was a little girl, there were horses and wagons, and the streetlights were all kerosene lamps. And they would light them. They would light the lights on a nightly basis and then put them out. And now we have cars and we have airplanes, and there's going to be an American on the moon." She said, "It's really hard for me to believe that." And so now we're looking at towards the edge of our galaxy. We have probes on Mars, and we go up and into space and come down out of space like it's nothing. It hardly makes news anymore. So it's the march of time is crazy. It's crazy, crazy, crazy. And so what when you think about the in your lifetime, the most memorable, not personally, but maybe the world event that's most memorable for you, do you have one?
Well, I think the one that hit me the hardest was JFK's assassination.
Yeah.
I was in high school in Palo Alto, and we were watching a Warren Miller ski movie in the auditorium.
Really?
And they came in, and lights went on, and they announced that President Kennedy had been shot. And everybody was walking school was out, and everybody was streaming into the parking lots, and just almost everybody was crying. Teachers were crying. It was pretty emotional. And that really hit me hard. How can this happen?
Yeah, he was emblematic of, right, of the new frontier. And,
yes, he was.
And he, a young, good-looking World War II veteran, and embodied, right, the aspirations of the nation, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so, I would say probably in my lifetime it's September 11th.
Yeah.
The thing that, you know, we all watched, and it changed certainly my life, the lives of my sons. I don't know that had I not come back in the Marine Corps, my sons would have joined the Marine Corps. They may have. They may not have, living up in North Dakota. But it certainly, probably if I pointed to one event that changed my life in a huge way, it would certainly be that. And just the devastation of that day of sitting around, we as a nation who watched it live on TV, from, you know, hearing that there had been a plane that hit the, you know, the World Trade Tower, and then hearkening back to the stories we heard in school growing up about a B-17 bomber crashing into the Empire State Building, you know, blah, 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 what's going on, and then, you know, a lot of us turning on the news to see what was going on, and then seeing the second airplane hit it live and thinking, somebody's doing this on purpose. Like, what's going on? Like, what the hell? And then the reports of the other airplanes, and then there was slow realization sinking in that somebody's attacking our country. And you know, the other thing I don't forget about that day was, you know, as a family, we went to Mass at St. Michael's downtown, which is a few blocks from where Kim lives. And a few blocks, it's a stone's throw. And the place was packed. Interestingly enough, the church was packed. It was just a day that you obviously that you'll never forget in your life. And so, in my lifetime, probably the thing that had the greatest impact on my life and affected me the most has been, and the lives of my kids, has been September 11th. So, interesting. I have a couple emails that I want to get to that, we've done this kind of deep dive on prime rib.
Yeah.
And
here.
Right. And so here's the first one was this. Hey, Mac, I'm a little bit cooking challenged, but I love prime rib. If I find the chef's recipe a little bit too daunting, is there a rub or anything I can buy out of the box to put on the exterior of a prime rib that he would recommend? That's a good question.
Yeah. Well, you can. There's not a box, but you can buy jars of spices. And what you want to do is create your own spice blend.
Okay, so hold on. The short answer to the question is no. There's not a rub that you know of that you would recommend.
My wife just handed me one.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm going to give you two choices. Okay? They're from a company called the Spice Hunter, but other companies make it. This is what she uses because it's salt-free, because of me. But you can salt and pepper. The first thing you want to do is rub your whole roast with olive oil, salt.
Okay, hold on, hold on. No, no, I think we're missing the point. He's asking if there's something that comes complete that he can buy to apply to the prime rib and not because he's cooking challenge.
Okay. Italian seasoning. It's called Italian seasoning, and it's a blend of spices.
Okay.
Already in the jar. And that it's herbs. It's herbs, not spices.
Get it together, man.
It's herbs. I'm sorry. I'm excited. The other one is called Herbes de Provence. That's a French blend of spices and of herbs. And you can look in the jar for what is in it. And that would be something you can do. You can do any kind of like Lowry's seasoning salt.
Okay.
Is a blend of, I don't recommend it. I'm just saying. But my two that I would use after you is Herbes de Provence. It's a blend of herbs, and I can read them for you if you want. It's thyme, marjoram, rosemary.
They can look it up because they're looking. The guy obviously is looking for something in a box, I don't know, or something that they can just kind of roll out and throw on. So I don't know that the
it's called, it's spelled H-E-R-B-E-S, capital D-E, Provence is P-R-O-V-E-N-C-E, Herbes de Provence. The other one is Italian seasoning.
And I've seen that in just about everywhere you go, you'll find Italian seasoning. So
pretty much my plan. That I put on my prime rib. But for a prime rib, you would need at least a whole jar of this stuff to cover the prime rib. Maybe two jars, depending on the size of your roast. But I would certainly use one. More than likely, I personally would use two.
Okay. All right. Next question. Does the chef have a wine that he recommends with prime rib?
I have a recommendation. My favorite is Chianti Classico. That's an Italian red table wine. You can buy it in your liquor store. It's from the Chianti region of Italy, which is near Florence, Italy, in Tuscany. And on the top of the neck of the bottle, there is a Gallo Nero, a black rooster. That is Chianti Classico, as the black rooster. Or, if you want a stronger, heavier, full-bodied wine, you do a Cabernet Sauvignon. A Cabernet Sauvignon, your favorite one, if you drink Cabernet, red wine, but that's what the two I would recommend. The Chianti is a little lighter. The Cabernet is a more full body and actually is cut through the seasonings and the whole point of drinking wine with a meal is you take a little sip after a bite or two, and it kind of cleanses your palate to taste all those flavors you just tasted. That's the purpose of drinking wine, and it helps your digestion.
and it gives you a little buzz.
Well, it depends on how much you consume. Yes, it can give you a very exceptional buzz. I could testify to that.
No, but when you talk about there's certain taste that set certain dishes off. There's certain blends of taste that go together incredibly, and so there's a function with this wine in addition to its taste, which is in the world of culinary things, it makes complete sense. It makes complete sense. All right, sir. First of all, I appreciate your time today, as always. Do you have any big plans for the weekend?
Well, the sewer at Kinesis in Buffalo, New York.
Let me decode that for everybody. The University of North Dakota hockey team is playing
at Kinesis College in Buffalo, New York, where the Sabres play. And tomorrow at 11 a.m. my time, 9 a.m. your time, the North Dakota State University Bison are playing Eastern Washington University in Frisco, Texas, for the FBS Division I championship. They've won 7 out of the last 8 championships. I think that's how it works. It's probably the winningest program behind Alabama in the country.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, Kim? There, a few years ago, there was such a rivalry between University of North Dakota and North Dakota State. The people from University of North Dakota would never have rooted, ever, for North Dakota State. That seems to have disappeared in that everybody in the state roots to that program now because of its success. It's kind of weird, huh?
It's very weird, but it's North Dakota
baby
pride. And, but next year, this coming season, we play we're in the same league as the Bison, North Dakota State. So we're going to be playing them again every year, and the rivalry will start up, and then everybody will get their hate on.
The hate's gone away with this.
Yeah.
It is kind of weird because you would not have rooted for them back if they were playing somebody for something. You're like, I'm not a Bison guy. I'm a UND guy. I don't root for them. But states that don't have professional sports franchises like Alabama, like North Dakota, these university teams, they're your professional sports. It's who the people in the state grow up watching. And when they play, last one out, turn the lights off because there's nobody around when those teams play. And that's no kidding, right? The bars are packed. And, and the same thing with University of North Dakota hockey. There's nothing the people of North Dakota enjoy more than the University of North Dakota hockey team going down to the Twin Cities and putting an ass whooping on the hoity doities from Minneapolis, St. Paul.
From the University of Minnesota.
Just absolutely tickles their fancy like nothing. Right? Because we're the hicks from North Dakota. Well, take that. So, Alabama, fans of Alabama, very much the same way. There's not a professional sports franchise in the state. They own the best college football program in the land, and they are not afraid to let you know about it. So it'll be good. It'll be good. Who are you picking in the national championship? Clemson, Alabama. Who do you like?
Well, I like Clemson.
Whoa.
But I think Alabama is going to whip them. I think the last time they played, Alabama got beat. So it's going to be a fun game to watch. I hope it's a close one. I have a hard time pulling the trigger for Clemson, but I would like to see him win. But I don't think they will. I think Alabama's going to win.
Alabama's pretty good. You know, to me, you know what? I heard a statistic, and I know you got to get going. So
I'm okay.
In the college football playoffs, isn't it amazing that in the semifinals of the, it's been going on for 4 years, I think, of the 8 games played, 6 have been absolute blowouts? That the difference between the top 2 teams and everybody else is that significant on an annual basis?
Well, I think we had a little discussion last week about expanding the playoffs to 8 teams.
Yes.
I think that would be much more equitable for everybody.
You know what? I think that would be the absolutely logical way to do it that if you win the Big Ten, you have an automatic berth. If you win the Pac-12, you have an automatic berth. So whatever, I think there's, what, 5 big conferences, 6 big conferences? And then you have 2 at-large berths of the best teams and conferences that, you know, when the SEC teams are ranked 1 and 2 in the country, their second team comes in, and you know, an independent, maybe University of Central Florida has been great. Obviously, Notre Dame had a great year. But again, the difference between, and that to me, you force all these teams for TV reasons and affiliations and money into these to make bigger conferences, and now to me, there ought to be automatic berths for all those, and it just to me makes more sense. So. And,
I can agree with you more, Mac.
Yeah,
I absolutely agree with you.
And then there's it's truly a tournament, and you might have to give up a game, and they'd have to work out the money for that. But anyway, so it goes. All right, sir. First of all, Happy New Year to you, and have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
I'm looking forward to it, Mac. Thank you very much for calling this morning.
You bet. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.